Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. So glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson, and if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour discussion with Nagame Abedini. She's the wife of imprisoned pastor Saeed Abedini, sitting in a prison and waiting for release. And oh man, can you be praying? If you just tuned in, I want you to catch the podcast and share it with as many people as you can. This is a godly man who is in Iran, building orphanages for orphans, and has been in prison for 2 years. He's got an 8-year sentence. He broke no laws. Pray for his soon return. Would you do that? Well, this hour, I'm excited to welcome my friend Jackson Dunn from Focus on the Family. Back when we did Everyday Relationships, Greg and I, Jackson, of course, is Greg's right-hand man. They are two buddies, and they really minister well together. Jackson joined us, and really, it was almost an impromptu plan. And it turned out to me to be one of the most gripping shows on everyday relationships that we'd ever done. And Jackson speaks all over the country in his own right, but he's got a personal story. And I think this is what fuels his passion for marriages and families. So I've asked him to come on the show, share his story of his experience as a child when infidelity happened in his parents' lives, how that impacted him. Because there's so often times we don't think it impacts the kids. But this is a story with redemptive endings. So stay tuned. And you can call in with questions at any time. Let me tell you about Jackson, and we'll get the conversation started. Jackson Dunn is a director of marriage and family formation at Focus on the Family, where he oversees programs, strategies, and initiatives designed to strengthen marriages. He speaks to singles and couples on a wide range of relationship topics, including walking through dating, engaged, premarital, and marriage relationships. He and his wife, Krista, have two boys, Jack and Sam, and live in Colorado Springs. And he has an influencer page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Jackson, welcome to the program.
Hey, Susie, thanks so much for having me. So good to be back with you.
Yeah, we've sure been missing you. It was fun seeing you when I ran into you in the hallway at Focus on the Family a couple weeks ago.
That was a treat.
Yeah, so we love to open up our show talking scripture. And you chose the verse, 2 Corinthians 12:9. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I'll boast all the more gladly of my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. And you also chose Hebrews 3:13. But encourage one another daily as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Talk to us about those passages.
Yeah, Susie, in Corinthians, you know, I often in this role, you know, having the title director of marriage and focus on the family, and the question often is, well, you know, how did you get there? How did, you know, doing what you're doing? And I know it always sounds cliche, but this verse so allows me to speak the truth of saying, but by the grace of God, and I don't deserve the incredible family I have. You know, it's nothing that I've done in my faith. It's nothing I've done in my success, but I'm so often reminded of this verse, you know, whether the story we're talking about infidelity today, but just my story, if you want to look at it in an equation, doesn't equal where I am today, but by the grace of God.
I love
that. And the times that I've hurt the most, that I've hurt others the most, that I've been struggling the most, this verse constantly, I hear him saying, my grace is sufficient. My grace is sufficient. No matter what you're going through, no matter what you've done, no matter the forgiveness you're seeking, that his grace is sufficient. And it's not a false, I promise you, and you know my heart, at least I know, you know, those listening, but it's not false humility. It is, I can't look at my story and see anything that I've done or any measure or anything for me to boast, because of the clear, clear grace of God, his redemptive work. I love the song we were leading into, his redemptive work in my life. And I am forced, let alone want, to give him credit for that, and knowing how strong he's been in the midst of the weakness, especially an incident like that we're talking about today.
Yeah. Well, I do know you, and I know that to be true about you. And I think that what you're saying is true for all of us, but we don't always know it's true. You know it's true. Mm-hmm. You're relying on the grace of God to establish you. And I think when we do that, Jackson, that's when we're positioned for God to do above and beyond all we could ever dare to ask or think. But we like our formulas. We like our strengths. We like to talk about our strengths and play to our strengths. But it's really in our weakness that he lifts us up in such a big way. And so I love what God has done. And I think you've just begun to see what he's going to do with you, sir. So always said that. I'm just saying.
Yes, you've been consistent and I've loved it.
Let me give myself some credit here, is the opposite of what you've just said. But anyway, let's start off by going through your backstory a little bit. Talk about your childhood and even how you came to Christ. What was it like for you as a kid?
Sure. Yeah. And it's funny. I never thought of my childhood as a bit crazy until I started telling my story to others, you know, cause it's just what you know. But my parents, and the more that I've kind of dug in, and you know, in different seasons of your life, you ask different questions. I mean, you've raised your boys and then all of a sudden they're getting married and there's probably different questions. And the more that I've dug in, you know, you've heard of Scott Stanley talking about sliding into marriage and the damage of that, you know, where you don't really decide, you just kind of, through a series of almost indecision or just comfort level, you just kind of end up married. And that's what my parents did. And they just was not a healthy situation they walked into. And they were divorced then. They were married for a while, tried for a while to have me. They were divorced when I was around 3. And, you know, I talked with my dad about it and he said,
"You were an only child, Jackson?"
I was an only child. Sorry. Well, and that's where it gets a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. So there, my dad at the time, there were two boys, myself and my younger brother, Joe. And for the first 2 years, I mean, he signed the birth certificate and everything. My dad thought he was his son. Mm-hmm. And about a year into his life, my mom let him know that she was with another man and that it was his son. There was never a paternity test. And I've seen my brother now hit 30 having some deep questions about who his dad really is, because he can tell innately something's different. Mm. And so he's my brother. He's my half brother. Do we really know? And I don't really know. I love him like a brother. We have grown up like brothers. So I'm technically an only child with my dad and stepmom. And I have my, I guess, technically half brother, with my mom and stepdad.
Okay. So your parents, your mom and your dad, your biological mom and dad were married for how long before they were divorced?
About 11 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So they tried, I think, for about 8 years. I mean, they had a lot of difficulty with kind of the infertility. And then I came along and they were married about 3 years before getting divorced after they had me.
And then how soon after did your dad get married again?
You know, they both got married pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, you know, infidelity is something that has been pretty rampant in past and present. In my family, especially in the men in my family. And I don't know who was unfaithful first. And it's not a trying to identify whose fault. I mean, that's where we get in trouble working with couples in crisis. It's not really about fault. Let's get to what's going on in the heart. But I don't know whose fault it was, who started first, but they were bold. I don't know. They were unfaithful for much of their marriage. Mm. And I think they brought those habits and those patterns into that marriage. And so my mom was with another gentleman who was in the same small town. And then my dad, when the marriage was falling apart, so here's another little crazy layer. When the marriage was falling apart, my dad was in Salt Lake City, Utah, for about 6 months on a job, sending money back, kind of all that type of thing. Well, he was frequenting the steakhouses and strip clubs. And he really liked one of these dancers. I don't know what I can say, sorry, dancers mm-hmm. at one of these places. And convinced her to come home with him. And so he actually, about a year after the divorce, they both, right around the same time, my mom married this man who is now the dad of my brother. And then he married this dancer that he met. And about again a year after that divorce. So that even just the plot thickens.
Your identity, I'm sure, was turned upside down, Jackson. Did you live with your mom at the time?
So what I did, my mom, back in the day, they didn't give much split custody back in the early 80s, but they gave him about 65, 35, 60, 40, which was pretty rare for that time. So I did Wednesdays with my dad and then every other weekend and then all the other days and every other weekend with my mom. But about the age of 12, I asked for some more time. So Susie, I spent most of my growing up Monday, Wednesday with my dad, Tuesday, Thursday with my mom, and then every other weekend. So it was a different bed, different house, different bed, different and completely different environments growing up. It couldn't have been more different, the homes, the cultures within those homes, the values, those types of things. But what I want to say, and I know this isn't the total point of the story today, but just for those that are maybe the stepmoms or the blended families, my dad started going to church because he'd grown up in church, came to faith at a young age, to look better in the divorce and custody battle. And he would admit that. It was just for show. And went to a good old-fashioned revival service, that little Southern Baptist church he grew up in. And my stepmom, God got a hold of her like nothing you've ever seen. She's gripping, you know, for those good Baptists who know what I'm talking about, the white knuckle in the pew. She's bawling. My dad's saying, she's going, what is wrong with me? He's going, you're under conviction. So he knew all the Christianese. He said, you're under conviction. Just shut up and we'll talk later. She goes, conviction, because she'd come out of the juvenile detention system. She's hearing, what did I do wrong?
Is this the dancer woman? Or is this really?
And they're doing drugs. They're living together. They're literally everything we know of hooking up to be relationally.
Whoa.
And all of the drugs, the party, the bad culture. And so he's trying to explain to her what's going on. And Susie, God got a hold of her like you would never, ever believe. And it was her in that decision she made. They got married immediately after that because they were living together. My dad always says she proposed because she said, we can't be doing this anymore.
Wow.
We need to get married. And it was because of her that we got involved in church. And at the age of 8, so about 3 years later, 3 or 4 years later, God got a hold of my heart. And I've always said, no disrespect to my dad, who is my hero, but probably the strongest spiritual influence formationally in my formation years on my life was my stepmom.
Isn't that
because
amazing?
Of the grace that she encountered in the midst of that.
And when it's real like that, when there's like a fire passion, that is what changes other people's lives, because it's real. It's coming from your soul, you know? Boy, there's so much more to this story. You're not going to, obviously you can tell by my response, there's even things about Jackson's story that I didn't know, but he's going to unpack a little more, because there's so much here that we can learn as parents, where our priorities lie, but even how our choices so deeply impact our kids and even teach them lessons. If you've got a question along the way, you can chime in. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Jackson Dunn in a moment.
I think one of the hardest things about being a child of divorce is trying to split your time evenly between parents. It's never something that you can do perfectly, but you know, trying to divvy up holidays, who's going where on what day or what night, who's spending the night here, spending the night there, it's just something that is really difficult, especially when your parents live rather far apart.
Thanks for tuning in to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson talking to my friend Jackson Dunn. He's Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family, but we're getting personal today. Jackson's just wonderful enough to give us just an inside look at his childhood, his coming to faith, the impact, some of the choices his parents made on him, but I think it's what fuels his passion and integrity for marriage and family. Before the break, so you've got this, your parents divorce, your mom marries the man that she had probably your brother with, that you're not sure about, then your dad hooks up with a dancer at a club, and basically to look better in the divorce, goes to church, and then his dancer girlfriend gets radically saved and proposes to him and says, let's get married, I can't live like this. I mean, wow.
And it's all true.
It's amazing. No, I believe it because I know you. But really, the passion that overtook her heart deeply impacted your spirit, and that was sort of a catalyst for you coming to the faith. So pick it up there, Jackson.
Yeah, and the reason why I share that story, Susie, is because when we get to where the impact of infidelity, and I definitely want to go there because, again, I think people that came out of it need to hear you're going to be okay. Mm. And I think people that, as you said, are playing with fire, and it is truly fire, there is a choice. There is a better option. But I lay that foundation because, I mean, we talk about being pulled out of the muck, pulled out of the terrible nature of life, of so many poor decisions, that even though we experience such healing and such grace and redemption, years later, very poor decisions being made. And and even when we know what we should do, sometimes not doing that, even when we've experienced making the right choices and the impact of that, we still make those poor decisions. So I want to lay that foundation that we did have it together pretty well, even in the midst.
Well, I appreciate that. I have a question though. So your stepmom was radically saved. Did your dad follow suit shortly thereafter? How did that play out as far as his faith journey?
Yeah, you know, like I said, it was that same little church. And let me, you know, what was interesting is we were, it was a town of 700 in the hills of Arkansas. And I'll pause so everyone can really get a good picture, because what you're thinking is basically true. and it was a pretty traditional place. And so I'm telling you, the way she dressed, the way she carried herself was very natural for her. But this was, people were running to the other side of the sidewalk. And there was one lady from this little church who reached out to her, who pushed through the stereotypes, who pushed through those types of things, and was the one who walked with her pre that kind of revival. So someone seeded the love of Christ. Someone seeded that grace and that truth. And she, from my whole growing up, was one of our closest family friends, and not realizing the impact she had had.
Wow.
So even that, you never
That's
know,
huge.
pushing through the uncomfortable, and look at, and the legacies here. And so my dad started, he followed suit, and then they became very, I always say, you know, those Baptist churches, you know, there's three or four services a week. I mean, we were almost every night in church. They're driving the bus, they're cleaning the church, they're opening the doors, they're locking them up, and became very, very heavily involved very, very quickly. And change. You know, my dad's helping lead the men's groups, and he's just, they became leaders in that church and in our community of people of integrity and of faith, and had such a great outreach, especially my stepmom, for those girls that were, those teenage girls who were struggling, who were making poor decisions. She had a voice in their lives that no one else did. She could get real with them, and they would listen. And
That's
so we
amazing.
Became very involved in a faith community.
And did you spend most of your time then at your dad's, or how was your time split up at that
point? More with my mom. Mm-hmm. And let me say, my mom's an incredible lady. And so she grew up very Catholic, like all the different schools and the high schools and all that, became fairly nominal at best. And neither my dad or mom went to church when they were married. So there's your one lesson. And then, but started going back to church. And so Susie, not only was it a different home every night, but one Sunday I was at the Catholic church, the other Sunday I was at the Baptist church. And so I basically was altar boy for the Catholic church on those Sundays. And I could see my friends at the Baptist church down the road, you know, in the small towns, they stack all the churches. And I was heavily involved there in the Baptist church. And so two very different faith communities. And like I said, the homes, the environments were just very, very different. And the music I could listen to, the things I could or couldn't watch, the video games, the language, the alcohol or no alcohol, the all those types of things could not have been any more different.
And what did that do?
In each one of those homes.
Sorry, what did that do for your sense of identity?
So this, it's going to seem pat here. I don't know if I fully realized what was going on. So when I say the grace of God, and we talk about that, He covers us, because I've been asked so many great questions over the last few years, things I never thought of. Like, why? I had someone say, were you not mad at your parents for making you sleep in a different bed every night? I'm like, this was just a few months ago. Mm. I said, never thought of it that way. Mm. I don't know. I didn't get angry. Probably the things I got most frustrated in, as your caller was calling in, just the logistics of it. My belt's down here. My basketball shoes are there. Just getting frustrated of having to run back and forth. But I don't remember struggling really with identity. I'll tell you where I struggled. The biggest, the things I had a tough time making decisions, and the innate people pleaser in me was on overload. And where I've found to be, have been most struggled in my life and relationships and in my own identity has been really, I would say those have been the two areas I've worked the most on in probably the last 15 years.
Wow.
But see, that's why I want to know, someone who's going through this now or staring down a divorce, maybe you are that 10-year, you know, you're that 18-year-old, that I don't know, that God's grace is sufficient. Like, He doesn't want this for you. No one desires divorce, and I didn't have a choice in that. But to see, and often the perspective of others, to show the grace and the covering of God in the midst of something that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I didn't question what I did. It doesn't make sense that I didn't have the anger and the confusion of so much that I should have had.
Wow. It reminds me of Michael Orr on Blindside, that he'd come through such horrific things. And when Sandra Bullock's character, Leanne Toohey, asks, you know, why are you not angry? And he's like, you know, my mom always told me to close my eyes during the bad parts. And so he closed his eyes and it protected his heart. I mean, just as a kid, that's what he knew. But I do believe God's grace for that. We just got a few minutes here before we need to take a break. So how long was your stepmom and dad married before marital troubles started to...
About 12 years.
Oh, okay.
And this was right in the heart of when Promise Keepers was big. You know, my dad was leading the charge. We were in a different church and was leading the men's group that was exploding, and the church was exploding. I'm telling you, you get a healthy men's group, it's amazing what happens to the church. And in the height of leadership within ministry, and same with my stepmom, heavily involved. And so this was a high time in the lives of the Dunn family. And like I said, they'd been married for a while, about a dozen years when this entered into the picture.
So did this kind of blindside him? Because sometimes that's how it is. It's usually after the height of a ministry thing where your guard is down and you don't realize it. But other times it's just busyness where you're not nurturing the things that you most care about and you're sort of open game. I mean, how did it play out in his case?
You know, Susie, I've wondered that because he used to always warn me. I became pretty involved in probably seventh, eighth grade, so well before this happened, in ministry at school. And he kept telling me, son, when you step into leadership roles, especially for the Lord, darts are going to fly, temptations are going to come. So I think he was aware, at least the general principle of that. And I've often wondered, did it come and sneak up on him? I've not gone to that depth with him, and maybe I will someday. Or did he have a tendency towards that? I know his past was riddled with infidelity, and I know God can heal and do all of that, but we also battle that kind of those struggles of our sin nature. And I don't know. I think it was my conjecture sitting here professionally. I think it was a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
I think there can sometimes the busyness and the distraction of doing ministry can cause us to neglect those closest to us. And I think there we all have our thorns. We all have those things, whether it be addictive behavior, whether it be the infidelity or the different things that we really have to guard against. I think it was a perfect storm of those things, especially. And I'm convinced too, Susie, with the impact and influences he was having, that I think we are more in the bullseye
of the
evil one who wants to steal and to kill and to destroy what God has been doing through us. And so I think when you put those things together, it was a bit of all of that really led to the fall.
Well, there are so many lessons from this story, and there's so much more that we're going to unpack. But just even right there, Jackson, is such a good point. I just realized we've had a number of shows recently about infidelity or guarding your marriage or when godly people do ungodly things. And I took Beth Moore's book, When Godly People Do Ungodly Things, and we unpacked just how these things sneak up on us and when we let our guard down, what happens. And more people are sharing that right now because we have a fierce opponent as an enemy. And if we don't think that we have to be intentional in our marriage and in our life, we right there are setting ourselves up for fall.
Absolutely. And Susie, it's not walking around scared. Here's
what
I try to help people understand.
Yeah.
I'm not going to walk around. Do I know that I am very capable of being unfaithful to my wife? I do. I am. I know that that's a reality. Whether you look at family history, whether you look at just what I know, the attack that's going to happen on me as a man in the role that I have. But I don't want to walk around scared. I can walk around again confident in his grace and the strength that he has and what he has in me. But we have to be aware and to be shrewd about the situation.
Exactly.
We put ourselves in.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, about being shrewd. More with Jackson Dunn in just a moment.
I would have to say probably being fair to both parents. You live with one more than you live with the other. So trying to make sure that the parent that you live with, that you still spend enough time with them and that you make them feel just as appreciated as the parent that you still live with.
That seems to be the common issue that kids, even adult kids, tend to express is trying to keep it all balanced. Like, there's so many things, and we should touch on that, Jackson, that the kids take on when the parents divorce. And, well, we have lots to talk about. You're going to have to come back because we're just scratching the surface.
There's so many places I want to go.
Yeah, and so Lord help us unpack the best of what we have here. So before the break, you were talking about, though, here your stepmom and dad are saved and they're full out in ministry, married 12 years at this point, and you still are, you know, back and forth between both sets of parents, and take it from there.
Yeah, and so, you know, I was watching my dad. It's just an incredible thing to watch him lead and to just, man, see him just on fire for the Lord and leading these other men and doing what he was doing. And then me in my own right at the time, it was a small high school and it was a small pond. So it was a little bit easier to be involved and probably be known a little bit more. But God had put opportunities in front of me with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And at church, I was a big time leader in our youth group. And so I've never, you know, until we talked about it, honestly, Susie, that show was so cathartic for me. The first time we talked about this, of the perspective I'd never had because of just great questions and conversation. But there was a bit of my identity tied into him as a leader. I mean, like I said, we were known like as that family, you know, that were in church and that were leading. And I was the guy at high school, you know, who was leading that stuff and looked to as the Christian in the school and those types of things. And so I was on a similar track just in that season of my life, and which I think is why, you know, the old phrase, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. I mean, you know, sometimes those that have, and we've seen that in the Christian world, that those with the most influence, those with sometimes the loudest voice. I mean, the crash is very loud, and it is very hard, and it's very damaging. And I think that's one of the things that was so tough for me, was how much my identity. I mean, the things you're talking about, we as children of divorce seemingly are responsible for and take on. It was devastating on many levels for me, because of him. Him as my dad. So just truly as my dad as a leader, and me in a very similar position and look to in that way as well.
And so you start to sense something. I remember you said last time we talked about this that it even surprised you that the thought went through your head, because your dad was your hero, but you were noticing maybe him spending time with a co-worker.
Yeah, so that's what it was, Susie. Even on the nights that I was there, because my dad, he's probably sacrificed, I would say, too much for me over the years. I mean, he sold out sometimes through the neglect of his marriage and other things. I mean, he was so deeply committed and squeezed every ounce of time he could get with me, because it wasn't at all as much as he wanted. And on the nights that I was home, he consistently was coming home very late, way later than he normally would have, where typically he'd be rushing home knowing I was there, since that was his night. And I noticed this one woman continued to seemingly be present in lots of different things. And even we're going up to the birthday party, to their child's birthday party at their house. And my stepmom's in the back crying, and my dad somehow guilted her and made me think she was just being crazy. Well, unbeknownst to me, where she had her suspicions, and we were going to this lady's house. And I remember they disappeared at the party. They were gone for a couple hours for some work emergency. And it was sitting in their house at this party, people I didn't even know, 15 years old, going, I wonder if he's having an affair with her. And then as soon as I thought it, I went, what? Who says that? No. I was so surprised by the thought, but almost unbeknownst to me, it coming together for me, maybe even preparing me for what was about to happen. That's when those suspicions, and I'm a pretty naive, last to know, happy-go-lucky, duck in a new pond type guy, where it's like, oh, yeah. And so for me to even think that and put that together was a pretty weird thing for me. And that's when those suspicions started.
And when did that surface then for you and for your stepmom?
Yeah, not too long later. I noticed a change in her behavior. I noticed she was very emotional. I noticed she was very downtrodden. I think she was trying to protect me the best that she could. And then there was a mutual friend who had an apartment up in the city where my dad worked, that at times it was a pretty good drive from home to work, that they would use on weekends or whatever, my family. And my stepmom was pretty suspicious. And so this friend started parking in that parking lot and watching that the apartment. And she started noticing them in and out of there together. And so she was able to officially confirm. And I can remember I remember the phone, what the phone looked like. I remember the chair my stepmom was sitting in. I remember where I was at in the living room. And I can remember the wailing the crying that took place when she said, "Your dad's having an affair. We're leaving the house." And we drove over to our pastor's house, and I stayed on the floor of their house, my friend's room that night, having just had that revealed. And the thing that I remember, so this, where the shame started setting in, is I played basketball, high school basketball, and we, on game days, we were supposed to wear polo, khakis, and a belt, and nice shoes, kind of deal, you know, to look the part. Well, I wasn't able to go home because my dad was there. Mm. I was wearing the same clothes I'd worn the day before. I had a t-shirt and jeans on and tennis shoes. And I got railed on all day for not wearing the right clothes.
And your world is falling apart.
And I couldn't say anything.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. What were some of the lies and, you know, what went through your head? I mean, what was going through your heart?
Yeah, I hated my dad.
Yeah.
I told him, "I hate you and I never want to see you."
Mm. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
So, oh God.
So what was true is he made a very bad decision. What wasn't true is that I needed to hate him, separate myself from him. I mean, I told him, "I hope I never see you again." What I didn't realize what was going on is I was carrying that shame as well.
Yeah.
And I
because you were so
like
tied to him.
I mean, I'm Jack the Third, let alone his son. I mean, I'm named after him, right? And so, and I didn't feel like I had anyone to talk to. And the lie that I was told was that I couldn't talk to anyone. I didn't even talk to my mom because I knew my mom had a thing out for, she felt like we were a little bit too Christian and a little bit too robotic with all that. I didn't want to hurt his image in her eyes, because I knew it was a rough divorce anyway. I didn't want my friends to know because I knew what they thought of him. I knew what they thought of us. The lie that Satan told me was that there was no one I could talk to. I had my pastor. I mean, I was able to do that, but there was no one at my level, no one with me. I didn't feel like I could reveal his failure.
And that is a lot to carry, Jackson, for a young kid. That is a lot to carry. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And there was a point, Jackson, where he wanted to follow through and leave, right?
Yeah. Then he had the nerve to plan on leaving us.
Mm.
And my stepmom was looking for apartments. He was planning on being with this woman. And you talk about thinking that your world is over. I mean, what do you do with that? And I had no ability to conceive of life. I mean, I'd finally figured out the whole living in two, you know, living with divorce and two different homes and all that. And I had no way of processing what to do with that. And still not feeling like I could really talk to anyone about that. And never probably, and that's probably where the emotion comes. I mean, here I am, my mid-30s, married and all this different stuff and my kids, and that never really, there was never anyone walking with me. Now that I'm in the help business of relationships and marriage and all that, and have been, there's no one walking with me probably to the degree that they should have to allow me to process and to know and to understand, to own what was mine and to not walk around with shame and guilt that were not mine.
Man, so, if there's ever a time a person needs a sense of identity, it's a teenager, it's guy or girl, a sense of belonging, a sense of family, a sense of heritage. And the lie that you had to believe is that, you know, family is sort of a myth. I mean, that there is no family that lasts forever. When you say I do, it's if it works for me. And you hear so often, Jackson, you hear people justify this infidelity in going with the next person as if the grass is greener, saying, well, you'd want me happy. My kids want me happy. And we're going to get to a redemptive part of the story, because I know some of you listening have gone there. And this isn't meant to shame you, because as Jackson was saying during the break, God does work all things together for the good. But this is not his best will. So we're speaking to you if you're playing with fire, or if you're deceiving yourself to thinking your kids would want you happy. This is not better, is it?
No. Susie, talk about lie of all lies within this. And I know what happened the more that I've dug into the story. My stepmom, my dad were struggling a little bit in their marriage, and my dad didn't feel encouraged enough and respected enough. And so this woman at work was just laying it on thick. And that's where I think there was a bit of a crack in that armor. was he liked that encouragement to being told he was the greatest thing. And so he started, and I know it, you know, we talk about those emotional affairs and those types of things. I don't think it started physical. I just think it started. And then you start telling yourself, see, she gets me. Mm-hmm. See, she knows what I need. See, my wife, she has no idea and she's neglecting. And we start blaming and making it about, and then making those lies the truth. That's why it's so hard for us to conceive of people justifying such a terrible, terrible decision, moments of pleasure for what the effects of that. But people begin to justify that kind of behavior because, like you said, I'm meant to be happy. I should have more. I deserve more. See if she would, but she won't. So this one, or he will, or they know. And that's where that justification comes, that we think is true, but it is based on a foundation completely of lies.
Yeah. You know, it's like we are wired for love, respect, affirmation, but we feel entitled to it. And I think that there's something when you go through seasons, first of all, of course, which you talk about all the time, we need to turn towards each other. We need to invest in our marriages. But when that's not happening and your spouse is maybe turning into a nag, or they're just treating you like a business partner, as a Christian, you get what you need from the Lord, and you dig deep, and you protect that marriage, or you say, let's have a talk. I'm going to fight for this marriage. I mean, it's, to me, such a cop-out to say, well, I'm not getting it from you, and I'm entitled to it, and I'm getting it from them, so I'm going there. And that seems so menial, but it's a stick of dynamite in so many people's lives, isn't it?
Absolutely. And Susie, what you just said is people want to make it about the other person. And what they have potentially done is walked into marriage never understanding the purpose of marriage. See, the foundation never having been secure that we are on this earth to become more like Christ, to reveal his glory. And in this relationship, the complementary process that happens in a healthy marriage drives us to be more full in who we are and identifying it. But see, they're not even going to what the core of that marriage. And Susie, so that's a huge thing that I don't even know if people have ever thought about. Mm-hmm. What is the purpose of this marriage? That's a whole nother thing. But within the dynamite, Susie, you look at the husband and the kids of this woman. You've got me and you've got my stepmom. You've got the spheres of influence. You've got the church group that's affected because he's got to step away. I mean, the dominoes. Yeah. And people get so single-minded and, well, it won't hurt anyone, or, oh, it's just this thing over here, or it's not gonna, you know what, my kids do want me to be happy. They want me to be loved. We've got to be so fooled to make such a foolish decision that we have no concept for those around us. Mm. And I think if that doesn't show you how selfish that you're being, to not even be able to understand or show any empathy or concern for those that, quote, mean the most to you. How deceived are we? How Amen. Selfish are we being? That, to me, it reveals so much of our heart. And if we're trying to figure out if that's a good decision, and the only pros we can put on there are lie after lie after terrible after selfish after, what is there to decide?
Boy, Jackson, that? It just goes to show you that if you replay in your head again and again, he's not doing this, or she's not doing this, and I deserve this. He's not doing this, and I deserve this. You are laying the groundwork for when the opportunity comes to justify. You've pretty much paved the road. You put a nice curb in, a little line down the middle. You've made it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm. And these are the people that would say, oh, I would never do that. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying,
yeah.
No, you've opened the door. You've opened the door. You're being deceived. You've cracked that. You've given a foothold. Be careful. Because even what, you know, that's the, I would never do that by you asking, by you making those statements, you've opened yourself up to that.
By making those statements, you've opened yourself up to that. When we come back, Jackson will talk about how some godly men stood in the path of his dad and kept him from leaving this marriage. There's a very redemptive part of the story that you won't want to miss. If you want to ask a question, I'll give a couple minutes to that. 877-933-2484. I want to give Jackson as much time as possible to wrap up this amazing story. So glad you tuned in today. More with Jackson Dunn in a moment.
Here we stand, here we are, with all our wounds and battle scars, from all the storms and all the wars we've weathered.
When one parent gets upset at the other one and they start to badmouth them in front of you, it doesn't happen often, but when it does happen, it just kind of disheartens you because it's like, well, I love both of my parents and both of them have always been a good parent to me. So when you start hearing things about how, you know, they're not a good person or something like that, it just kind of hurts it to hear that about one of your parents.
I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking with my friend Jackson Dunn. He's director of marriage and family formation at Focus on the Family, telling a very personal story, and just really honor you for that, Jackson. And so we're picking it up at the point where your dad has an affair and really is about to leave you with your stepmom. And but then men blocked the way, basically. Isn't that right?
They did. And I want, so we're obviously speaking to that person that might be considering this decision. And I don't want to be overly critical. I mean, the human part of us is going to ask that. So I don't want to be heard as going, I can't believe you. No, I can believe it because we asked that. But we're talking to a lot of people that are in a community of, whether they know it or not, people that are considering this decision. And there was a pastor and a deacon, in our church that made it their business. Some people go, hey, that's not my business. You know, I mean, hey, maybe he would be happier. That's kind of his call. Or I can't believe he's doing it. I wouldn't do it. But they made it their business. They first and foremost loved on me and my stepmom. Many nights spent at my pastor's house, them taking care of us. And these guys, my dad denied it for a very long time. And so if you're a guy speaking to another guy, our natural tendency, we're going to deny it. And you're going to, well, see, he said it wasn't happening. Well, I'm telling you time after time, whether my own story or others, they're going to deny it. And you're going to have to push through that. And they got in his grill and they didn't give up. And they said, we will not let you make this decision. They covered us in prayer, but they had some very strong conversations and very much pushed through my dad's anger, through his resentment to them, through his hurtful words. I'm sure he said all kinds of nasty to them. And they surrounded him and they surrounded us and they allowed to paint a picture that it was going to take a long time for that trust to be rebuilt. And because some people go, we could never come back from it. You know what? My parents now, my dad and stepmom are getting close to 30 years of marriage.
Wow.
And I was just talking with my stepmom yesterday morning, and she said just how much more she now appreciates my dad and appreciates their marriage and where better than they've been. And even through all the stuff that they've gone through. And so these men stepped up and they didn't overreach. They didn't overstep. Susie, I think they did what we have been called as the body of Christ to do. They admonished, but they love. They spoke the truth, but they did it in love. And they did it in such a graceful and redemptive way in our lives. And Susie, that's whatever side of this discussion you're on right now, if it is that side, I think that's our responsibility, because I don't know where we'd been if someone wouldn't have stood in front of him and said, no, whatever it takes, this isn't the right decision.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. And God has redeemed your relationship on a very deep level with both your parents. Talk about, does your dad talk ever about those days, or how is he different now?
You know, we've not talked much about it. And I think my dad is now much more careful. I think he checks in more. I think he has learned how to continue to build trust. I mean, Greg and I, we teach all the time that trust isn't earned once and for all. It's a daily thing of being trustworthy. Mm-hmm. I think he's gotten that to a certain point. I think he's always been honest about his mistakes and about the things that he has done before, during, and after, you know, that ordeal. And I think he has been much more conscientious as a husband. He's always been one to take care of other people and do those kinds of things. But I saw in him, there was a period of him probably being defensive. I think for a while, my stepmom might have, you know, asked a little more direct of a question or wondered. I think he kicked back against it a little bit because it's like, hey, I made my mistake. I've asked for forgiveness. I think he became better with that, of being more intentional in the way that, again, whether it be he would check in or who he'd spend his time with or where he was spending his time. I think he made those adjustments, whether he realized the impact of them or not, of how the impact that they would have. But he did change that behavior. And that's what people have to understand. It's not just I realize the peril of my ways. Will you forgive me? I'll never do it again. Let's pretend like nothing ever happened. And it doesn't work that way.
No, it definitely
and it's a very
doesn't.
Long journey of rebuilding that trust. But I will tell you, I can remember people asking my stepmom, why would you have ever go back with him. I can't believe you would go back knowing what he did to you. And I can remember always saying, by the grace of God, I love him, and by the grace of God, I'm going to pursue this marriage.
Wow, that's just absolutely amazing. And I know you talked about last time we had this conversation on Everyday Relationships, Jackson, about your pursuit of your dear bride when you were loving her. I know Greg says you stalked, and you said it was a diligent pursuit. I'm going with
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. And please make sure my sons know that.
Exactly. So, but I remember you saying that you had a conversation with her that this is not only, you know, in your immediate family line, but there's some of this in your family history, so to speak, and you're so aware of it that you want to show up in this relationship, and if this turns to marriage, very aware of that. Talk about that dynamic and that conversation with Krista.
Boy, I maybe should have been a little more tactful as I went about that. I was kind of young and naive, but it was significant. And that's what I want people to hear, Susie. If you are you're not unmarried, but a child of divorce, you might be scared of marriage. And I remember making that decision around 15 or 16, 15 going on 16 there when it all was going down, that I don't know when I'm going to get married, but when I do, I'm going to get married once and for all. And I'm going to be faithful to my wife. And I met Krista early on in college. And I mean, it's a debate between stalk and diligent pursuit, but I was very much, I will admit, but was very much going after her. And then finally, after about 18 months of pursuit, I like to say she saw the light. Most say she gave in, but I remember doing a study of my family. I was actually in a family studies course for part of my biblical studies major. So it wasn't a class I opted into, it was one I had to take, and absolutely loved it. Some of the most significant growth. And I was analyzing the patterns of my past. It's called a genogram, is, you know, when you start looking at tendencies, and, you know, some find addictive behavior, some find, you know, the infant mortality, you know, those kinds of things that you find, whether biological DNA, whatever. And mine was infidelity, was rampant. And I remember telling her, and it spooked her a little bit. I said, baby, listen, I see this, and I want you to know, I realize I'm susceptible. And she's going, and I said, I'm not saying I'm going to, but I want you to know, as I enter into this relationship, I see where the men before me have fallen. Mm. And I know God is gracious, and I know, and I'm seeking him, and I will be faithful to you. But of just realizing that and how significant it was for me to say it, I don't, you know, probably for her to hear it, but for me just to acknowledge it, not to run from it, not to be ashamed of it. You know, finally that shame, Susie, gripped me for so long. It wasn't my shame. It wasn't my guilt, but I carried it. And to be able to say, although you see this in my past, as for me and what I hope to be our house one day, I will serve the Lord. I will be faithful to you. You can trust me. And I see the peril of the ways around me, and I do not want that for you, for us, and for our family someday. And I tell you, at a very young age, being forced to think about some pretty heavy things and making some pretty significant decisions and commitments moving forward. So call that the redemptive work of seeing that. I would never wish that. I don't want to look back on that stuff. It's obviously very hard to how many years later, but I'm so thankful for God's redemptive work through that, even in just revealing to me the sanctity and the power of a lifelong marriage.
Well, that is, to me, the power of this whole thing, Jackson, because you aren't responsible for your past family history, but the two things you're doing is saying, I'm approaching every day by the grace of God. I mean, it would be unwise to say, I'll never do this. You're saying, by the grace of God, I'm going to be dependent on him. But you're also turning the table on the enemy and helping thousands of other marriages. I mean, that's exactly a picture of redemption, and I just applaud you for that, Jackson. You are such a dear man, and you have such a precious family. We just have a moment here to wrap up. Would you pray for our listeners, their marriages represented here? Because I know there are some listening who've maybe they've started to pave that way, going, I deserve this. I'm not getting this. And that, to me, is just laying some of the foundation for a way out. And would you pray?
Father, speak your truth into these stories of those that are listening. I don't know where their marriages are. I know there's deception. I know there may be pain. There may be hurt. Father, may your truth, may your light, may your life through your word, through your spirit, and Lord, through your people be present in each of these stories. And those that may be considering this decision, Lord, put someone in their way, put a scripture, put a word, put this story, a story of someone else, Lord, to reveal you and what you have for them so much better than anything they may experience through this kind of decision. And Lord, I trust you. I ask you for your grace, for they may they see the sufficiency of your grace in the midst of this weakness and in the midst of this struggle. Mm. And pray your protection in Jesus' name.
Amen. Jackson, I just thank you for spending time with us, and I can't wait to have you back to talk about what else God's put on your heart. God bless you, dear brother.
Thank you, Susie.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of today's show up on our website, myfaithradio.com. We've got lots of great articles there. Check them out while you're there. And I say this to you every day, and I really mean it from my heart. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong, and He is the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.